The skills we need to grow our own food used to be passed on from generation to generation, but that system broke down several decades ago. Now those skills are in demand again. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. If you don't have a mom, dad, grandma, or grandpa to teach you how to garden, you can turn to Iowa State University Extension. Today, we'll talk about Extension's homegrown lifestyle course with agronomist Andy Larson and master gardener coordinator Denny Schrock. Students will learn about gardening, edible landscapes, beekeeping, and even backyard chickens. Horticulturist Richard Giron will also join the show to answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and horticulturist Richard Giron will join us later in the show to answer your questions. But if you have a lot of questions about growing your own food, Iowa State University Extension and Outreach has a whole lot of answers. And today we'll talk about one of the ways they deliver those answers through Extension's homegrown lifestyle course. With me is Andy Larson, ISU Extension Small Farms Specialist and Homegrown Lifestyle Coordinator. Hello, Andy.
Morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
And also with us today, Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock. Hi, Denny.
Hello. Great to be here, Charity.
Welcome back to the show. And Homegrown Lifestyle is a 12-week course that's offered through Extension offices around the state. Andy, who is this course designed for?
Well, we originally designed it for acreage owners. So basically folks that lived on, you know, about a half to up to maybe 10 acres who were really interested in being more self-sufficient in their food for their family and wanted to learn how to garden and grow fruit and hunt, raise livestock, that kind of stuff. But the appeal has broadened a little bit over the course of a couple years, and we've had folks from urban areas on up to folks with 80 or 100 acres who are trying to figure out what to do with it.
And what was the need that you saw that you're trying to fill?
Well, it was particularly we saw the need in metropolitan areas, the external suburbs, the agurbs, some people call them. Those were the folks who had enough space that they could start growing their own food, but they didn't really know where to begin. So they wanted just to get an introduction to a lot of different topics so they could figure out where they wanted to delve deeper.
And is this something that has grown out of the local foods movement where people are saying, okay, I want to eat locally, now I want to grow my own food?
I would say yes, definitely. People are really seeking a relationship with their food, with the land, and with the people who grow it. And yeah, I would say that this is a direct outgrowth of that.
And why a 12-week course? I mean, Iowa State University Extension has been meeting this need for people for many years. There are lots of publications online. Of course, we answer questions every Friday on Hort Day.
Yep.
Why was there this need to go farther?
It's the specific focus on food. It's getting an introduction to a wide variety of courses from soup to nuts, literally. Vegetables, fruits, windbreaks, grazing, goats, bees, poultry, and just also getting folks to meet together with one another in local offices and get to know their peers in a cohort group over the course of a spring so they can all plan what they want to do in the upcoming growing season.
So let's talk a little bit about the different subjects that are covered.
Sure.
And Denny, why don't I turn to you first? I know you're actually both involved in teaching about edible landscape design, but tell me what that's all about.
Well, edible landscape design has been around for a long time. The concept really kind of originated back in the 70s with Robert Couric and Roz Creasy. And as the local foods movement has taken over, more and more people are interested in planting materials in their yard that not only are pretty to look at, but also useful as far as food crops. So rather than planting a ornamental euonymus shrub, maybe you plant a clove currant that has beautiful flowers in the springtime, but also produces berries or fruits that you can eat. And what we're trying to do there with that is to show people how they can incorporate things, even in a city yard. On my own, I have a little bit larger than normal city yard. It's about a half acre. but I have raspberries, blueberries, clove currants, aronia berries, strawberries, you can a couple little columnar apple trees. So even on a city-sized lot, you can produce a lot of food in your landscape and still make it look beautiful. It doesn't have to be a row crop look effect in your landscape.
Well, I was just going to ask, because I see that some of the other topics that are covered in the course are cultivated fruit crops, for example. So lay it out for me a little more clearly. What is the difference between saying, I want to plant a small orchard, and edible landscape design?
The edible landscape design is where you definitely incorporate it into your landscape. So for the casual person who drives by or walks by, they probably wouldn't know that you're into edible landscaping. It looks like a normal landscape, but you might have Swiss chard in your flower bed, or you might use a columnar apple tree rather than an ornamental maple tree. Whereas the fruit crops session that we're talking about are those people who are really interested in doing it on a larger scale. Perhaps they don't get enough from the one or two trees they'd have in their yard. They're wanting to produce enough to make some cider. So they need half a dozen or 20 trees or something like that to get a quantity. They may be looking at it on a small commercial scale, but it really is just a little bit different scale than enough to eat fresh.
Okay, and let's talk about what you teach people about vegetable gardening as well. And of course, Denny, you work with master gardeners. Again, what would the difference be between the focus in the homegrown lifestyle program and somebody who wants to become a master gardener?
Well, in the master gardener program, it could be a matter of scale or a matter of depth of coverage that we're talking about. With the master gardener program, we really cover the whole gamut of horticulture. And because of that, we can only touch the top surface of any topic. And actually, we do have master gardeners who go through this homegrown lifestyle program as sort of an advanced master gardener training, if you will, because it delves deeper into all those topics. So with this homegrown lifestyle, we talk a little bit about some things like high tunnel production of vegetables, which normally you wouldn't get into at all in the home landscape. But, you know, things like season extenders. How can you, in your own home landscape, use wall of waters or row covers to extend the season? For example, in my own yard this year, I was harvesting lettuce in mid-December. A little unusual late fall, but by using a few techniques, you can really extend your growing season and have fruit all the time. I harvested my Valencia orange crop about a week ago, too. I have a Valencia orange growing in a patio tub that I take into my greenhouse, a lean-to greenhouse on the house. So you can do a lot to produce local food year-round here in Iowa.
Even when it's 5 below.
Right. Well, and when you read publications about sort of this back to the earth or local foods movement, you see a lot of articles about how on an acre and a half you can produce enough food to sustain 4 families or something like that. But Andy, this is not a program for people who want to try to start up their own CSA, right?
No, not necessarily, no. We don't focus on the business aspect of it at all. Really, this is the production side. People do come and take this class when they're trying to get an introduction to the different types of crops, the different kinds of audiences, the different kinds of methodologies for producing them well. And then they'll go and take maybe another extension course or a community college course or something like that, learn a little bit about accounting and business planning and how to apply for a loan and things like that. And they're going to be the sort of next level up, the commercial production scale.
And we didn't really talk about the structure of the course. I mentioned that it's a 12-week course, but what kind of a time commitment is this?
So it's 12 weeks on Thursday nights, starting on March 14th. It's from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m., so an evening class. And the first half of each class is going to be a web-based presentation from a state specialist, you know, from ISU on whatever the topic is for that week. And then the second half of the class, the local coordinator. So this class, despite being the first half being delivered centrally, the second half is coordinated specifically by the people in the areas that are offering it at their extension offices. So there's a local coordinator, and they plan some kind of hands-on workshop for each individual week. Maybe it's building a rain barrel, or how to centrifuge honey out of a hive, or maybe it's just a local speaker or resource person that the people in, you know, Linn County or Boone County or wherever else are going to need to know going forward when they are doing their food production.
And this is not being offered at every extension office around the state.
No, at this point, because it's such a commitment for the local coordinator as well, not every extension office is able to provide it. So we're planning on 10 locations right now. And if we get adequate registrations at each location, we'll go with 10.
All right. And if people are interested in signing up, how do they find out more?
HomegrownLifestyle.org. It has the schedule, it has the speaker bios, it has the different locations, and it has a link for registration, and you can do it all online.
All right, and of course we put a link up to that on our Facebook page as well. And looking at some of the other topics, we talked about edible landscape, we talked about vegetable gardening, cultivated fruit crops. You have some topics, though, that are not about the garden, are actually about raising livestock. Why is that important to include?
Well, in my opinion, it's much more sustainable in general to have a system that incorporates both crop production and some kind of livestock production. Just has to be scaled appropriately. For example, I'm producing a nice-sized vegetable garden on my little urban fifth of an acre, but I have chickens, too, and the manure from the chickens goes into the compost pile, the compost goes into the garden, the scraps from the garden go into the chicken, and that cycle of nutrients and that cycle of production is really important to me as far as keeping agriculture as sustainable as possible. And that's upscaled in crop and livestock agriculture in Iowa and in other states. I feel like agriculture is incomplete without animals.
And there is a whole session devoted to composting and manure.
Yes, there is. Manure is important. As people aren't necessarily aware of that right from the get-go. But it's great stuff, and you'll develop an appreciation for it.
All right, and probably knowing how to manage it properly will heighten that appreciation.
I think so.
All right, we'll continue our conversation in a moment. We're going to take a short break, and we want to welcome you into the conversation. You can call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Maybe you have an acre or 3 acres or something like that, and you've wondered what to do with that. Feel free to ask your questions here today. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Andy Larson's going to stay with us. He's Iowa State University Extension Small Farm Specialist and Homegrown Lifestyle Coordinator. Denny Schrock is going to stay with us as well. He's coordinator of the Master Gardener Program and a lecturer in the Hort Department at Iowa State University. And coming up in just a moment, horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension will also be with us. And we want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And joining us now, horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here on this very, very cold day. I suppose it's a perfect day to think about gardening, right?
Sure. It always is.
All right. And Andy Larson is also here today, ISU Extension Small Farm Specialist and Homegrown Lifestyle Coordinator. Also with us, Denny Schrock. He's Master Gardener Coordinator and also a lecturer in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. And you are welcome to join us with your calls, your questions, 866-780-9100. Maybe you've been thumbing through that seed catalog and thinking about trying something new and you have questions about it. Maybe you have a few acres and you don't know what to do with your acreage to make it more productive. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And this is a question from Ben in Mount Vernon. Hi, Ben.
How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I have about 8 acres of pasture that was overgrazed for about 10 years with horses, and the horses are gone now. And for the last 2 years, I've burnt that pasture off in the spring, and it's improved a lot. The grass is getting thicker. The weeds are diminishing. And so it continues to improve. I'm not going to graze it anymore, but I'm wondering, how many years in a row can I burn that? Will I have detrimental effects by burning it too many years in a row?
On that question, you may want to check with Steve Barnhart. He is the extension agronomist here at Iowa State, and his specialty is forage and pasture crops. So that's right up his area. I don't know his phone number offhand, but if you go online, you should be able to find it.
Okay. And, that'll work. Thank you.
Just a little piece of input from a non-expert on forages or grazing. There are some systems out there that, you know, have involved grazing for decades or centuries, but there's oftentimes a lot of rest periods in between them. You want to be careful not to burn off all of your organic matter with these fires. So, talk to Steve, call one of us, and we'll help you figure out sort of a management plan that's going to help you build the organic matter and the soil quality in addition to the forage communities that are grown above ground.
All right. And again, you were recommending Steve Barnhart. What's his specialty?
He's a forage agronomist.
Right.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Ben. You can join us at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Diane is on the line next in Ames. Hi, Diane.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, do any of the homegrown lifestyle classes cover woodland growings, woodland production, some of the natives, or anything of that matter?
Yeah, we have a class with one of our natural resources, ecology and management specialists, Jesse Randall, and he is going to be talking about trees and wild crops. He'll be talking about windbreaks. He'll be talking about groves. What you can use to integrate food trees into an otherwise just shade or windbreak type of functionality. So, yeah, he'll definitely be covering some of those topics.
And I have one other question, if you have time.
Sure.
I have land that borders a conservation area. Are there any kind of programs for homeowners that they could kind of keep that bottom land forest in native growing conditions and keep that kind of so that the Iowa wildlife and native plants continue?
You're just trying to learn what kind of communities to plant down there, or?
Well, I'd like to also try to kind of keep it in a native ecosystem.
I don't know what to tell you. As far as programs, the best agency to get in contact with is going to be the Natural Resources Conservation Service. They do have something called the EQIP program, Environmental Quality Incentives Program.
Okay.
And there is a lot of titles within that program about maintaining native vegetation. One specifically is called CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program.
Right.
I think
the
land that you put into that program has to have a farming history associated with it, but I would definitely contact the local NRCS office in your county.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Diane. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. With your questions, it can be about your plans for your acreage. It can be about your plans for your garden, or if you have an ailing houseplant. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. And you can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Andy, with the variety of topics covered in the homegrown lifestyle course, do you have people who come to you and say, you know, I'm really interested in vegetable production, but I'm not interested in wildlife management? Do you have people who say that they would like to take part of it, but not all of the course?
Yeah, you betcha. There's a lot of people, as a matter of fact. Well, I would say at least a handful every year have expressed that particular concern. But one of our goals with this course was to be able to provide a pretty comprehensive snapshot of all the different types of agriculture that you can perform in a small acreage in order to really create a diverse sustainable system as well as possible. So we feel it's important for folks to get an introduction to all these different type of topics. But those who really don't want them, they don't show up that week.
All right. And I didn't ask you about the cost. What is the cost for the program?
If you're an early registrant, by February 21st, it's $149 for the 12-week course. After that, it's going to go up to $179. So we have dropped the cost a little bit this year.
All right. And here's a question from Mike from Mallard. He has a couple of, winter squash. He wants to talk about winter squash in a couple of different varieties, heirloom varieties, including pink banana and winter luxury pie squash. He's wondering if anyone knows if they're worth growing.
Well, the heirloom varieties, some people find to be very tasteful. So you might just like that taste. So I think some of the heirlooms are very, very good. Now, they may not be as productive as the hybrids. So you kind of sacrifice the taste for the production, but some of the heirlooms are very, very tasty as far as quality.
Well, it sounds like a worthy experiment.
And with pink banana, you only need to get one or two fruits because they are huge. They're like 3 feet long. So
you may only plant a few seeds, but it sounds like it might take up a significant portion of your garden.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope that answers your question, Mike. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Frank is on the line next in Fairfield. Hi, Frank.
Hi, good morning. I have about 12 acres of timber and then 7 acres of pasture. And in the timber, there's a lot of multiflora rose. And I'm just wondering if there's an easy way to get rid of it.
Easy way, no. But you can. There are some herbicides that you can use. It's going to take some persistence and patience on your part. But there are herbicides that you can use, for example, Roundup. There are some other herbicides that you can possibly use. If you go on to the Iowa State University homepage and type in multiflora rose, I think there's specific information on herbicide control on the internet, so you might want to try that. But it is going to require persistence and patience. It's a very tough, tough, aggressive plant.
And if you want to go the non-herbicide route, there is also the possibility for, it takes a little bit more creativity and a little bit more infrastructure, but intensive goat grazing can actually get rid of some herbicide in your forest land as long as you manage it carefully that it doesn't damage the other plants in the community.
I was going to say, an intensive goat grazing can get rid of pretty much anything, right?
There is that possibility.
Does that answer your question, Frank?
Well, what about mowing? Will that kill it off eventually?
I think that's a part of the plant in a pasture situation where if you do it repeatedly or at certain times that you might be able to do that, yes. And I think on that internet page, they do discuss management, which normally includes herbicides, but may include things like mowing or things like that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I appreciate the tip, and I'll call you next year when I've gotten rid of it.
I'd love to hear success stories.
I was going to say that what I'm hearing, that may sound a little optimistic, but good luck, Frank.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Ruth is on the line next from Fort Dodge. Hi, Ruth.
Yes, I've always thrown my paper white bulbs away, but I was wondering, is there any way you can save them?
Not really. They're easy to force, but they're hard to save, and typically we would simply suggest to discard them. Now, if you want to force normal daffodils, those that we plant outside, you can force those indoors. You can keep those, plant them outdoors, and they will perform well outdoors eventually. So those you can keep, but the paper whites, they're not hardy outside. If you plant them outside, they won't survive the winter. And they're simply so weakened by the forcing process that they really don't bloom again. So usually we discard them, put them in the compost pile. Enjoy them.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Ruth. Next up is Jesse on the line in Boone. Hi, Jesse.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a question about backyard chickens. I have a small flock. In the summer, they get rotated in a paddock style around my yard. I live in town. In the winter, so they don't destroy the area that they're in, I have them in my vegetable garden, and they kind of go through everything that I've left behind and turn the soil. But I'm wondering if that will be too much of their manure deposit, if I should rake the top layer and put that in compost, or if I can just till that in the spring.
How many chickens and how big an area is going to be? It depends answer.
Sure. I have 6 chickens in about, it's a 50 by 10 foot, so about 500 square feet.
I'm guessing that that's not going to be the... It's not going to be an adequate amount to cause nitrogen toxicity or anything like that. You might start to build up a little bit of phosphorus over the course of over the course of a couple of years. But 6 birds in that big an area, composting it would be ideal, but it should compost in place to a certain extent. One of the things you might consider doing is turning the top layer of soil in the spring before you plant your garden, just to allow for a little bit of degradation and natural composting right there where the nutrients are going to be used.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Jesse. And, you know, I think that with more and more people getting backyard chickens, I'm guessing that chicken manure is getting incorporated into more and more gardens. In just a nutshell, what do we need to know to use that kind of manure safely, Andy?
There's not a lot of safety concerns. Composted properly, where you're giving it enough moisture, enough oxygen, turning it a couple of times, and getting it up to a temperature of 130 to 140 degrees, you're going to have a really safe, really inert compost with some really stable nitrogen compounds in it. You're going to want to keep fresh manure off the surface of food crops as best as you possibly can. And you're not going to want to run chickens in your garden when there are fruits actively growing, at least not in that section, because they're going to get eaten.
I was going to say they'll eat everything they come into contact with. But in Jessie's case, she's not composting the manure. It's just getting worked directly into the soil. Is that a problem?
Generally, no. It's not generally a problem. I know people have concerns about poultry and about eggs and things like that, but... manure is a pretty safe substance, especially if it's allowed to decompose for at least a couple of weeks before actively planting anything into it.
That's what I was going to say, is that she probably doesn't want to take her chickens off the garden and plant tomorrow.
Right.
She should wait a couple of weeks, and as you dig that into the soil, essentially what's happening is it's called sheet composting.
Mm-hmm.
You're composting in place with the soil. So it is a different type of composting than putting it into a separate pile, but it is a form of composting.
Okay.
Yep.
Jesse, thank you so much for your call. And Valerie is on the line next from Wisconsin. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the program. I live in the middle of the woods, and I have a large garden on the south side of my house because that's really the only place I can get sun. But unfortunately, it's right in the front of the yard, which is nice if you have a pretty garden. But we have to have a large fence around our garden to keep the deer out.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, I'm trying to think of a way to make the garden a little more... beauty to the eye, I guess, instead of having this large fence all around the front of my yard. Do you have any suggestions?
Go ahead.
I was going to suggest some ornamental beans or something of that nature, edible beans that might have some flowers that you can grow on the fence, so you would have the actual green foliage rather than the fence itself to look at. So that would be a possibility.
And it's more expensive, of course, but you can put up a decorative fence as well as having just a ramshackle fence or anything like that. I've seen some very decorative fences used as deterrents to keep deer out, and it can be quite attractive. But yes, any vining-type crop, beans, even some of your vining crops like squashes will cover the fence pretty readily and grow up on the cucumbers, all those sort of vining crops.
And there is a type of deer fence that doesn't provide such a substantial physical barrier.
Uh-huh.
people call it 3D fence, or there's other names for it in the trade, but it's essentially three wires, and the wires are on three different planes. So instead of being all lined up on one post, they're lined up on a couple of posts. One of those wires is electrified and then baited with peanut butter to train, or some other bait to train the deer that this is an electric fence and you need to stay away from it. So if you're just seeing it from the road or whatever, probably won't even notice the fence is there, except for those couple of small, skinny posts that are holding the wires up. It just takes a little bit of training of those deer and a little bit of patience on your part.
All righty. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And we do need to take a break, although when we get back, we'll talk about some more ideas for creating a green veil. With Joellen from Marshalltown in just a moment. We'll take your call after this break. And you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Also with us today, Andy Larson, ISU Extension Small Farm Specialist and Homegrown Lifestyle Coordinator, and Master Gardener Coordinator, Denny Schrock. He's also a lecturer in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. You can find a link on our Facebook page to the Homegrown Lifestyle course, and you're welcome to join us with questions about your garden, about plans for something bigger in the future, and really any questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension. Also, Andy Larson is here today. He's ISU Extension's Small Farm Specialist and Homegrown Lifestyle Coordinator. We were talking earlier about the Homegrown Lifestyle course offered by Iowa State University Extension. You can find a link to all kinds of information about the course on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. And also with us is Denny Schrock, Master Gardener Coordinator and lecturer in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. And let's get back to the phones, because I promised that we would talk about using greenery to make things look more beautiful and more opaque. Joellen is on the line from Marshalltown. Hi, Joellen.
Good morning. I have a strange situation. My bedroom window is about 2 feet from my neighbor's driveway, and it is eye level. I don't like air conditioning, so I don't have my drapes and windows and stuff shut in the summertime. I need something that will grow on a trestle, really thick. It may have flowers, but it doesn't necessarily have to have flowers. I just want it nice and thick, but enough for him not to see in, and for me to get the breeze from outside. What can you guys recommend?
My first thought would be, if it gets enough sun, maybe Sweet Autumn Clematis. Sweet Autumn Clematis. It's a clematis.
How do you spell clematis?
Clematis, C-L-E-M-A-T-I-S.
Okay.
It's a vine, a twining vine, so you have to have something for it to twine around. It's also a very vigorous plant.
Okay.
Tends
Does it
to have,
grow fast?
I would say yes. I would say yes.
Okay.
It blooms in the fall, as the name would suggest.
Okay.
Small creamy white flowers.
Okay.
They have a very pleasant fragrance.
Oh, cool.
Okay. And so you see, they're fairly common in Iowa.
Okay.
Fairly
so
easy.
I can be able to pick it up anywhere, like maize or something.
Yeah, garden centers.
Okay.
catalogs, websites, fairly common.
Okay.
It basically needs, I would say, a fence to twine on. You have to have that. It should be a well-drained soil and at least 4 to 6 hours of direct sun, and that should be all you need.
Okay, great.
Now that plant will die back to the ground in the winter. You simply cut it off near the ground. It comes back, and it grows back very quickly, and you have this nice screen.
Okay, when should I get it and start planting it or getting things ready?
Plant in the spring, probably spring. Late April or May.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm getting tired of leaving the windows open and sleeping in the nude. And after a while, it gets so hot that I don't care. And so when I was listening to you guys, I thought, oh, this is my chance to find out what I could grow. And believe it or not, I've lived in that house for 9 years.
Oh, wow. Well, I hope that certainly solves your problem. Thank you so much for your call, Joellen. The number to call to join our conversation with really any question, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We try to keep them plant-based, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mary is on the line next in Johnston. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Good morning to Denny. Crown Vetch is a good green hedge, but I don't want it.
and that's your problem, right?
Yeah. I have a labyrinth, and I've tried to get rid of the Crown Vetch. Have you got any suggestions?
Crown Vetch. Again, patience and persistence. again, you could use Roundup on it. It's going to take more than one application.
I guess.
So it might be like a 1 or 2 year job or chore, maybe longer. You have to destroy all the root system of that plant. So, is it a big area?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So it's going to take some time. It's not going to be just one application of Roundup. It's going to be maybe several over a year or two.
And oftentimes a combination of mowing and Roundup. You mow it off, that cuts it back a bit, let it resprout a little bit, zap it with Roundup because it's weakened it a little bit. It'll take up that Roundup really well, so it weakens it more. It'll probably grow back again, mow it off, let it grow, zap it with Roundup. Just keep repeating that cycle until it finally is gone.
Right. Never give it a chance to recover from what you're doing. Keep at it. And eventually weakened it to the point where it kind of disappears gradually.
How soon this spring do you think? How soon to this spring can I start Roundup?
Well, for the Roundup to be effective, you want a plant that's fully leafed out and growing actively.
Yeah. Okay.
So I would probably guess maybe mid-May or so, mid to late May.
Yeah, when it's up 6 to 8 inches or so, you can start.
You guys ought to come meet my Crown Vetch.
Well, sounds like it could be a team effort.
Okay.
Mary, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
And let's answer a question from email. This is from Art in Edgewood. He said, I'm interested in installing drip irrigation for two gardens. One has a small raised bed and another a large traditional garden. Starting from scratch, what advice do you have? And can drip irrigation be used effectively with row crops?
Absolutely. I don't think we have any publication on that, but drip irrigation is great in that it cuts down on the amount of water that you apply. You're applying it directly to the ground. You have less loss of moisture. You could also use a soaker hose. That would also work in that situation. I would guess if you go on the internet, you'll find some information on installing it, but that would definitely be a good option.
And there are a lot of drip irrigation kits out there that he can readily purchase and put together his own system. And most of those kits have good directions on how to put the pieces together or how much you can do that. So you can get those at most any home box store or any place with a good garden center is carrying drip irrigation kits these days.
All right. Terrific. Let's get back to the phones. And Tina is on the line in Amana. Hello, Tina.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, when I moved in here a dozen years ago, we had a great big hedge of willow, and that willow has kind of died back, and we don't really want it there anymore. I was doing some research online and saw that in Great Britain, you could plant cut willow, just plant the cut ends, in any sort of a pattern and create wonderful sculptural effects. I'm just wondering if that's possible in Iowa.
Willow is a plant that has latent or preformed root initials. So, yes, it roots very readily. Really, all you have to do is take off a 30-year-old piece of wood, but one that's about 1 year old, a good piece of wood, and it'll have preformed root initials. Stick it in the ground. As long as it's got fairly constant moisture, it will root, whether you want it to or not.
It's fairly easy to grow.
Well, I saw some beautiful sculptures, like a horseshoe shape, and then you can tie the top together and put a bench in it, or just all kinds of things.
Yeah, willows are very limber, so that's why you can make baskets out of them, things like that. So it is possible. They're very easy to root. No problem whatsoever.
Well, Tina, when you get this accomplished after they grow and you make this happen, send us some pictures, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up is Beth on the line in Indianola. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I was wondering, when you're starting seeds indoors, is there a goal for number of hours of light versus dark that we should be going for?
Once the seedlings come up, I would make sure they have at least 12 to 14 hours of light.
Okay.
And I would just probably use a ordinary fluorescent fixture and put in two 40-watt tubes. If you can, put a cool white and a warm white tube in the fixture.
And so we don't need to get the special, all-spectrum plant?
No, you really don't. You really don't. They're far more expensive, and you really don't need them. And then make sure you position the fixture just a few inches above the seedlings, like maybe 3 or 4 inches, not 2 or 3 feet away, 3 or 4 inches. And what you can do is buy one of these cheap timers, plug it into that, and you're all set.
Okay.
All right. Beth, thanks a
Thank
lot
you.
For your call. And next up, let's go to Chuck on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Chuck.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a mature hard maple tree, an older one, about 30 feet or so, about two feet in diameter, that has a hole, about a 6-inch hole up about 6 feet off the ground. I assume where maybe a limb has come down or been taken off or something in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's all healed around it and everything. Doesn't seem to be causing any problem, but the hole goes back into the center of the tree, and then it's a little bit down, and I don't know how far up. I don't think very far up. Is it advisable to fill out with anything, or is there anything you could do to just keep the varmints out and maybe the fungus and stuff that would grow in there? Actually, not.
You don't want to fill that. That used to be a very common practice where they would fill it with cement or some other...
Well, I thought I'd seen that.
Yeah, it used to be a common practice, but no, actually, that tends to be counterproductive because even though you fill that, there still might be some moisture trapped behind there, and it can't dry out because you have the cement in place. So it actually makes it worse. And if you were to sell the house and then someone else bought the house and they decided to cut down the tree... Having cement in that tree, if they cut it down, could be a huge hazard for that individual because they wouldn't know about it possibly. So filling it is not a good idea. You really can't do much in that situation. The biggest concern there is the rotting in that it does weaken the tree and it makes it more susceptible to storm damage. But the tree has to deal with that as best it can. Sometimes it does, other times it doesn't, and you have that cavity.
It's healed around the outside edges, ways, and everything. Okay, well, that's all I need to know. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Chuck. And next up, let's go to Lindsay on the line in Eagle Grove. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
Well, my husband and I, we have two fairly large gardens, and we love to do all kinds of different varieties of vegetables. The only issue is that the squash always seems to take quite a bit of space. So we were considering starting our squash plants kind of out in the prairie grass that we've planted. on the back 2 acres to let it sprawl and kind of keep it out of the way of the other plants. And I didn't know if you had any tips on if that would work or other ideas that we may use.
I have my doubts as far as it working. I think one aspect that you could try, there are a few bush-type winter squash varieties that you can find where they don't vine as much as most varieties do. So that would be an option where you find an actual bush-type variety. They're not common, but they're out there, and they don't get nearly as big, but they do produce the same type of fruit.
Another option is, as we were talking earlier, fences around the garden and allow the squash to grow up on the fence. Now, with some of the larger varieties, you may have to create or use a sling out of old pantyhose or something like that to support the fruit. But you can do that as those fruit develop, that we're using the vertical space rather than the horizontal sprawling space.
Okay, that's a great idea. Thank you very much.
All right, Lindsay, thank you so much for your call. And next up, we're going to go to Rick on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just have a question about the Roundup. It seems that when there's time to kill something, it's always the answer is always Roundup. And there's, especially in Iowa, there's a number of organic farmers and people that are very conscious about chemicals that they put in the ground. And I was just wondering if there's any alternatives that Richard or any of your other guests may have that would also do roughly the same as the Roundup.
Well, thanks for your call, Rick. And I do want to point out that with both times that Roundup came up today, there was another option also discussed. So people, of course, can have choices, make choices, depending on their beliefs. But Richard, I'll let you respond to that.
Right. The one reason I asked about the size of the space as far as the crown vetch was, if they had a small area of crown vetch, they might be able to kill it by just covering it with some surface, like maybe an old piece of carpeting or some heavy-duty plastic. And that basically would work if you could leave it on for like a year or so. So if small space, I think that would be practical.
All right. Rick, thanks so much for your call. And we've got time for one more question. And this is from Anita in Coralville. She says, our house is a split-level house, so there are a few steps and landing to the entrance. The landing and the stairs are concrete, so from street and driveway, the concrete stair wall is very visible and is ugly. We have a flower bed below the wall. What can I grow that's tall enough to cover the ugly-looking concrete wall? Any ideas would be appreciated.
I'm thinking on that.
One of the things that I would have liked to have suggested for the last caller who was looking for something tall and fast was potentially growing hops. There are varieties of hops that do well in Iowa, and they can grow anywhere from 8 to 18 feet tall, depending on the maturity and the variety.
Feet might be overdoing it.
It might be overdoing it just a tad, but they can be trained in different directions. And just like the clematis that Richard was talking about, they'll die back in the winter, get cut off, and grow up again in the spring, early spring.
One possibility I'm thinking might be something like English ivy. If you have a hardy variety that might be able to climb that structure or the concrete, that might be a possibility.
Boston ivy or Virginia creeper is a native that could grow there as well. And depending on how tall that wall is, even growing a shrub in front of it, if there's enough depth to the space, you know, something like the blueberries or raspberries, we're talking about edible landscaping, we could possibly do something like that there.
You bet.
All right, so there are a lot of different options. Thank you all so much for your help today.
You're welcome, Charity.
You're welcome.
Horticulturist Richard Gerard from Iowa State University Extension. Andy Larson was also here today. ISU Extension Small Farm Specialist and Homegrown Lifestyle Coordinator Denny Schrock was also here today. Master Gardener Coordinator and Lecturer in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. You can find out more about the Homegrown Lifestyle course on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, with technical support from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday, I'll talk with novelist Joseph Giha about his new novel, Lebanese Blonde.